Welcome back to Module 2 of What's New in System Center 2012 R2 Jumpstart. I'm Simon Perryman, I'm joined once again by Kenan Owens, and in this module we're going to be focused on infrastructure provisioning. So let's just take a quick look about where we are today. Now we kind of have seven main modules, seven main capabilities that we're going to cover. We gave our introduction to the Cloud OS, but now we're really going to focus on the next steps towards moving to this private cloud model, which is configuring your infrastructure. And so by infrastructure, we mean those physical components running in your data center. So we're looking at your networks, your storage, and your servers, which contain, of course, both memory and compute that we're going to be using as our virtualization hosts. Now, with that, I'm going to turn it over to our infrastructure specialist here, Kenan. And why don't you give us a more detailed view of what we're covering in this module?
Excellent. Thanks, Simon. So we're going to cover three main topics. We're going to talk about how you configure and deploy your compute, your storage, your networking resources. So these are the underlying physical infrastructure resources that you have out there. We're then going to talk a little bit about the day-to-day operations and some of the things that Windows Server and System Center 2012 R2 have done to improve day-to-day operations. And then lastly, constructing, pulling together everything and building the private cloud and some of the new capabilities with R2 there. Now, for this conversation, I'm only going to really be focusing on the new things with R2. I'm not going to be going over everything that System Center 2012 can do. If you have interest in that, you can go back and look at the MVAs for SP1 and for System Center 2012 to get that context and background. So I'm going to assume that you have some of that knowledge inside of there.
And if you don't, remember you can ask questions on the chat window. We have a great team of experts, including people from Kenan's team, people from my team, people from the field. So if you have any questions about anything we're talking about, or you just have System Center questions in general, feel free to jump on our chat window and ask our awesome team of experts.
Exactly. So what we're going to do now is we're just going to jump into it. I'm going to do a quick introduction, and then we'll go straight into the things that System Center 2012 R2 can provide for you.
Great. So I think next you're going to talk about some of the common challenges that we hear from customers.
Right.
So what are these challenges that we regularly hear, and what have we done to really try to solve these?
Okay, so a lot of the needs, like if I'm a business, an organization, there are some things that I just need to be able to manage my infrastructure efficiently. I want to have a way of centrally managing these infrastructure resources. I got to be able to decrease the operational costs, or in other words, my operational costs every year are increasing. I want to be able to put a cap on that and see if I can drop that thing down. The other thing is that I have all these different types of resources. I got computers from IBM, Fujitsu, HP, Dell, it doesn't matter. I have all these different servers out there. I have these different types of storage, iSCSI, SAN, direct attached. How do I pull all that stuff together and get the most out of that, most efficient use of it, by abstracting these resources into something that I can give out and dole out to my different business units?
And I think that ties back to the central management as well. You know, there's always an overhead if you have six different storage vendors and you need to go into their specific storage management. That's a lot of overhead. That's a lot of additional training.
It is.
So by having us really add this virtualized layer on top, allowing you to manage with a single set of APIs,
right,
we're really enhancing your ability to more efficiently manage it in a standard and consistent method,
right,
regardless of what the underlying array or computer is as well.
Or as an organization, maybe I have different groups. I have a storage team, I have a network team, but when I want to deploy a server, a VM or something like that, I don't want to have to every time go out to my storage group. I don't want to have to go out to my network guys. Why can't they give me that pool of resources of whatever it is, like you said, six different vendors, doesn't matter, and I can then just dole it out to whoever needs it when I need to do that. And we've got to be able to do this both on-premises or inside of a private cloud or a service provider. And how do I handle things like that? And then lastly, how do I quickly deploy these services, these physical servers? I rack them, I stack them, but I need to now get an OS and things on them. What's an easy way for me to do that? So this hits into challenges. Challenges are I need to be able to easily deploy these things. I need to decrease my capital as well as my operational costs. I need to be able to handle these new servers that come out there with these new tools. I mean, we got now, you know, really, really fast networking. We got all these different things, converged networking with my fiber channel, my network, everything pulled together. I got these really fast servers. How do I handle those new servers, but also be able to use my existing infrastructure. Maybe I have servers 2-3 years old. I can still use them and gain cloud efficiency with them. So protect those existing investments as well as use new ones. And then maintain this separation of resources in a multi-tenant environment. My sales team can't talk to my finance team, as we talked about earlier in the first module. How do I keep those things split, yet be able to use these resources at the same time, shared together? So we talk about that. Really, if you think about all of what System Center 2012 R2 does, is it can deploy compute and storage and network resources. It can help you construct this private cloud. It can help you manage this across clouds, whether it's on-premises or at the public cloud or a service provider. It can help me in my day-to-day operations. And lastly, you know, how do I pull all this thing together and build an architecture? We're only going to focus on the ones that are new for 2012 inside of these groups, but this is where VMM and System Center 2012, and you pull all those things together, really fits in and helps you with that underlying infrastructure provisioning and management. So the first thing we're going to do is talk about how I deploy my compute, storage, and network resources, focusing initially on the compute resources. So with Windows Server, I'm sorry, with System Center 2012 and VMM R2, we can allow you to monitor and manage your Windows Hyper-V systems, your Windows Server Hyper-V systems, your VMware vSphere systems, and your Citrix Xen server systems. I can have all of them show up inside of VMM, and I can do things like consistently deploy virtual machines, deploy different even services and things like that, as well as migrate virtual machines around and such from within the VMM console. Now, with Windows Server and System Center 2012, with System Center 2012 SP1, we supported VMware vSphere 4.1 and vSphere 5.1. With R2, we're adding vSphere 5.0 support. So now we support all the latest versions of VMware vSphere that are out there for our customers to be able to use VMM as a consistent management platform for those, as well as my Hyper-V systems, as well as my Citrix Xen Server 6.1 environments. Now, there are some things that we can do in Hyper-V that are a little more than what you can do within VMware vSphere or Citrix Xen Server. There, I deploy them separately, and then I add them into VMM to deploy my virtual machines and things on top of. But with Hyper-V, I can actually do things like bare metal deployment of a Hyper-V server. Now, this isn't new with R2, but it's something that I see some people using, but not a lot of people using, and I just wanted to bring it up again because I think it's important for you as an IT organization to be able to deploy your virtualization Hyper-V resources in a consistent manner. So within VMM 2012, as well as 2012 SP1, as well as R2, we have the ability to deploy bare metal Hyper-V hosts. So take a system, a blade, a rack mount server, whatever, plug it into my network, connect to it via the out-of-band management controller, and with SP1, we're able to now discover all the different devices on that system, and then push down an OS with the configurations available for it to deploy that system, bring it in as a Hyper-V server. I'm going to go through the steps that we take to do this. And I'm doing this because, one, this bare metal discovery, deep discovery that I'm going to be talking about is new with SP1, enhanced with R2. But two, it's something that's really nice for an organization to be able to leverage so that they only have one consistent platform for deploying these Hyper-V environments.
So when we say we're going to do bare metal deployment, let's quickly review the big benefits. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that we can literally take a new crate or a new shipment of servers, we plug in redundant power, redundant internet? So we always want redundancy, right?
Right, absolutely.
And from there, we can turn it on, and Virtual Machine Manager can go and deploy every piece we need, from connecting it to the storage, the network, the domain, the operating system, everything, right?
Exactly, all of that. So basically, I have a rack of servers, I plug them in, I plug in the out-of-band management, you know, if I'm using HP, it's the ILO cards, Dell DRAC, those types of things, and I can connect to those systems, reboot them, or boot them up, depending on where I'm at, deploy an OS on top of them, do the configuration. Even if I want to do things like NIC teaming, I can create that NIC team on that system, get the Hyper-V role installed on there, add it to my host groups, and then from there I can join it to a cluster and create a cluster of those servers. So now I don't have to go to one tool to deploy the OS, one tool to configure clustering, another tool to then join it to VMM. I can do all of that from within VMM.
So we're basically, now we're not just doing rapid deployments for virtual machines, we're doing rapid deployment for our physical infrastructure as well.
Exactly, for the private cloud infrastructure that I want to use.
Great.
And I'm not going to do this for my SQL server or something like that, but for my Hyper-V systems, I'm going to do it. And what we added with SP1 of VMM 2012 is this deep bare metal discovery. So what we'll do is we'll take and boot, we'll go with VMM server and find the server we want to deploy via the out-of-band management controller. We'll boot that physical box, and it'll connect to the WDS server. We'll load a Pixie image down to it and do a WinPE boot of that system. After we boot that system, then the physical machine will come up. We'll do a discovery on that system. So we'll execute a few queries and calls and figure out exactly what's on there. You know, I have these four network adapters, these MAC addresses attached to those network adapters. That gives me, as an administrator, the ability to say, okay, I want these two teams together. I want this one and this other team. I want to put this host profile on that system. And then once we figure out how we want this thing configured, in VMM, you do this through the wizard, or you can do it through PowerShell. We will then kick off the deployment onto that host. And those steps basically look like this. Again, after we figured out what that system is, we'll do an online reboot of that system. So VMM will kick off an out-of-band reboot through that bare baseboard management controller. It'll then connect to the WDS server, authorize itself through VMM, and we'll throw a WinPE image down on that system. We'll do any type of generic customizations that we have to do to configure things like the partitioning of the system or something like that to get that system ready and prepped to then deploy the OS and everything onto. Once we do that, we will then copy down a VHD file. So now with Hyper-V, we're using boot from VHD to boot that Hyper-V system because it is really just an appliance for you. It's that virtualization appliance that you're going to use to deploy the OS and run virtual machines. We're also going to inject any special drivers. You know, if I have a special driver for my QLogic adapter or something like that, or my network adapters, I'll be able to inject those drivers into the system, do any customizations that we have to do, and join it to the domain, enable the Hyper-V role, and basically reboot the system and add it into the host group as another member of the cluster or another member of the host group. Lastly, running any type of post-installation scripts.
Great. Well, we've actually got a few customer questions already come in. It seems like there's a lot of interest with this bare metal deployment. So first one we have, when we're doing a bare metal deployment, are we literally just booting off of a VHD, or are we actually configuring this information on the server so the server will have it installed in kind of its core operating system, the parent boot partition?
So how VMM handles it is we boot after we do a bare metal deployment, the physical system will boot from the VHD that we've installed on that system. And that is, you know, we'll set up the boot loader so that when it boots directly to that VHD file. So that is the OS that's installed on the system. And by doing it as a VHD means that we can, basically if we had to or wanted to, we could just take a new VHD and copy it down there if we wanted to update it that way. But it's an easy way for us to quickly and easily deploy an OS on there. Now, once it boots up, it's going to use the Windows Server normal booting mechanisms to find out what devices are on that system and everything and do all the configuration and those types of things. But yes, we've now set up those Hyper-V physical systems to boot from VHD. Now, they're not going to be storing the VMs inside of that VHD on that physical drive. Instead, those VMs will be attached to your iSCSI storage, your SAN storage, your shared your storage spaces, whatever. So that doesn't matter because the VMs are going to be running on performant hardware.
So that was actually the second question. So just to confirm, can we do boot off SAN?
This isn't set up to deploy from a boot off SAN. I'm sure that you can set up Windows Server itself to boot off SAN, but we're not going to automatically configure that with our bare metal deployment.
Okay, and then the third question we have, can we integrate with WinPE?
So this uses WinPE to do the out of band reboots, the out of band reboots for the initial deployment down there. So yes, you can add in special WinPE. You can add in your own WinPE that it uses to deploy down there for that initial boot of the machine.
Now, a very specific question regarding WinPE. So let me clarify here. Would we be able to do it off removable media? So, for example, if we wanted to use a thumb drive on that particular host, could we plug it into the host? Could we do WinPE, pull it off that thumb drive or that other removable media?
So the answer there is not if you're using the automated bare metal deployment that we're doing here.
Okay.
But technically, there's no reason to stop you from doing something like that. That's really just between you and whether it's supported with Windows Server 2012.
That sounds great. Thanks.
Sure. All right. So, again, now that we have this machine installed and it's added as a member of the host group, Virtual Machine Manager can manage your Hyper-V systems, your VMware vSphere systems, including vSphere 5.0 now with R2, as well as your Citrix Zen server systems. The cool thing about 2012 is that I can create host groups where those host groups can be just my Hyper-V systems, or those host groups could be my Hyper-V systems and the VMware environments or Citrix environments. I can co-mingle my different hypervisors within the same host group, which means that I can set parameters at a higher level, at the host group level, and they would apply across all these different platforms.
So does that mean if I say I want to go deploy a virtual machine or I want to deploy a virtualized service, that if using Virtual Machine Manager, I can deploy to any of these three hypervisors?
Exactly. And so what I would do is I would create a virtual machine template or a service template, and that service template would have a profile that would allow me to deploy to either a VMware environment or a Citrix or a Microsoft environment. Now, one thing you have to be careful of is that if my VM template is set up for Hyper-V, it's going to use a VHD file. If it's set up for VMware, it's going to use a VMDK. So the template will decide which host it is. Now, if I try and deploy that template for VMware on a system that only has Hyper-V, it's not going to work.
Right.
But I can create different templates for those different environments and deploy them. And the cool thing about that is that the VHD and the VMDK files, that VM template is one thing, but then I can deploy applications on top of those, and those applications could be the same whether it's on VMware or Microsoft or Citrix.
So let me just repeat that back, make sure I'm understanding. So what you're saying is even though in some cases we may need something specific for a particular system based on VMDK, VHD, whatever file type, if we have an application that really that doesn't really have a dependency on that, we could go configure that and we could go deploy that across any of these different types of hosts, right?
That's correct.
So essentially we're really abstracting what we need to interact with across these different hosts, giving you some flexibility to run your apps anywhere in the environment.
Exactly, exactly. And that's an example of what I'm going to be showing right here. So I can create this thing called a service, which is a collection of one or more virtual machine tiers, which could be one or more virtual machines, and I can push it down to a Hyper-V system. That same template, except for the underlying VHD, basically, I could push down to a Citrix Zen server environment, or I could take this same template and put pieces down on multiple different environments. So I could take that same template and put, say, the web server and the SQL server on my Hyper-V and put my app server on my VMware. And the fact is that we can abstract the applications installed on top of the template or top of the VHD and VMDKs from the actual virtual machine that we're deploying on there. And that's one of the beauties, and that's one of the cool things that we can do with VMM is give you that flexibility as to whatever resources I have today, whatever resources I'm going to be moving towards, I can create these templates that can deploy across those platforms.
Great.
So that was compute. Now if we move to storage, one of the things that we've done, we introduced this with System Center 2012, and we improved on it with SP1, and we've really done a lot of work to improve on it with 2012 R2, is this ability for you to leverage the storage that's out there that you have. Whether it's SAN storage that's available that you get allocated to you from your SAN team, whether it's iSCSI storage, whether it is a file share. So with Windows Server 2012, we introduced the ability to store virtual machines on a SMB file share. With R2, we've done even more enhancements with that. And with System Center 2012 R2 and VMM especially, we've really enhanced it to take advantage of those underlying SMB shares and to better handle those things. So one of the things that a lot of our IT organizations want is the ability to understand when I've deployed a server, when I've deployed a VM, how that VHD file maps to the underlying physical resources that it's sitting upon, which maps to the physical server or Hyper-V host that it's running toward on. And so being able to do this end-to-end mapping and understand the association between them is important. Being able to understand how much resources I'm using to be able to know when I'm starting to run out of those resources so I can either deploy more or pull resources away. I want to be able to do that. And then be able to more quickly leverage the storage itself to do rapid provisioning of resources. So within end-to-end mapping, we're focusing on things like this unified storage management API. So we're using SMIS as the protocol for managing the underlying storage. So we have common calls, whether it's to your EMC SAN, your NetApp SAN, or whatever. It doesn't matter. But it also supports your iSCSI environments. And with Windows Server 2012, we support the iSCSI, Microsoft iSCSI target as a manageable environment from within VMM. And then lastly, and something that's new with R2, is the ability to manage your storage spaces environment. So this means now that I can take a storage space that's out there and I can create different pools on that storage space to create these SMB file share mappings that then I can allocate to my different Hyper-V hosts and they can deploy virtual machines upon there. So we support discovery for the Hyper-V hosts. So we understand the Hyper-V hosts and what devices are attached to there, whether it's your iSCSI connections or whether it is your fiber channel adapters, and understand for masking and unmasking operations, what devices you have, the worldwide names, those types of things. Storage monitoring, this thing called indications, where we can make a change outside of the VMM environment. Maybe the storage guy added some more disks or a pool or something like that, and we can get an indication of that something's happened so we can figure out what's happening and understand our storage environment and how it's changed or not without having to affect the running virtual machines that are out there. And then discovery on my local environments, my NAS environments, file servers with Windows Scale File Server, those types of things. We can do all that from within VMM, and we really did a lot of work with R2 to be able to handle the SMB capabilities or file share capabilities that Windows Server 2012 and R2 provides.
So let me jump in and ask you, if you can you quickly give an overview of what are the major enhancements we've made with SMB? Like, why has this suddenly become so relevant for us with regards to virtualization and Windows Server 2012?
So probably the biggest thing about that our customers have been asking us for a while with Hyper-V is I have the ability to access a file fiber channel SAN or iSCSI, mm-hmm. but that's a local disk that's attached to my system. It's another HBA that I have to install on the system or something like that. Well, I have all these different high-performance file servers that are out there that has all this different storage. Why can't I use those file shares that are out there? So with Windows Server 2012, we introduced the ability to store Hyper-V virtual machines or SQL databases on an SMB 3.0 file share. And with System Center and in 2012, our SP1, we had initial support for that, but we really didn't have it integrated into System Center itself. So with R2, we did a lot of work to integrate the ability to take a file share that's out there and treat it as a classified piece of storage that we can allocate to different storage resources. And this is just a really good way for an organization to start leveraging basically their industry standard hardware without having to purchase expensive SANs or stuff to get those SAN-like capabilities.
Yeah, I mean, I like to articulate it, and I'm a cluster guy, right? I come mm-hmm. from cluster world. So one of the big challenges we've always seen is, all of our customers are virtualizing. They're putting all of their VMs on a cluster,
right.
Yet clustering in the past had this dependency on shared storage, which was expensive.
Right.
Specifically, it had a dependency on a SAN. So what we've done with this release is kind of remove this dependency of a SAN having a storage area network and just say, hey, what, shared storage, you're going to be good enough. If you have file shares using SMB3, we can communicate over that. So definitely a big value add, in the availability area as well, just reducing costs for our customers, making it easier to manage using existing investments you already have.
Exactly. And if you add on to that the ability for Microsoft providing a scale-out file server where we can have different CSVs that are out there and do load balancing across them with R2, where we can use the best path to that file share resource. That really gives us now an ability to provide some low-cost storage that's out there, but get the performance that they're looking for.
Now that you mentioned, you know, let's spend a minute on the scale-out file server. I want to just kind of spend a few minutes talking about the big benefits of that. Uh-huh. So with a traditional file server that's running on a cluster, the challenge was that the way that people would connect to the client access point, which would be your share name, you know, whack, whack, my share, that was only hosted on a single server at a time. And so that meant if that server crashed, that access point was unavailable. It would have to go offline, fail over, come back online. Same thing if you needed to do maintenance on that server. You'd have to bring things offline, do the patching, sure, fail it over, bring it back online. And so that meant that there were often interruptions. Now think about what would happen if you're running a Hyper-V virtual machine through that file share, and you have to go do patching, you have to do rebooting. You're essentially making that VM inaccessible.
Right.
So benefits of the scale-out file server introduced in Windows Server 2012 is we now actually put that client access point across multiple physical hosts. So you have whack whack my share on node 1, node 2, node 3. The actual routing device that lives above that has multiple addresses plumbed into its routing table saying if whack whack my share on node 1 is unavailable, redirect people to whack whack my share on node 2. And so essentially what this means is even if one of those share names becomes offline, becomes unavailable, the clients just immediately get reconnected to one of the other share names, and so they can continue operations. Now with a traditional file server, this means if they're doing a file copy, the file copy will hang for a minute, it will continue retrying once the client gets redirected. More importantly, with our virtualization world, if a client's using a virtual machine go into this file share, this server crashes, not a problem. We keep track of those transactions that are running in Hyper-V, and then we'll go push them down to a different path. So essentially, this is providing redundancy and multiple paths to your actual storage fabric going over SMB. So we definitely want to encourage people to start looking at their scale-out file server for hosting their Hyper-V virtual machines.
Exactly. And one of the things that you can do now with System Center 2012, with VMM and the R2, is that you can actually do a deployment of a bare metal deployment of that scale-out file server. So now I've plugged in two physical pieces of hardware. They're attached to, say, some shared JBOD using shared SAS behind them. I can take and deploy the OS on that system, create the file server cluster, the scale-out file server cluster, provision the storage spaces on there, create the file shares that are going to be used for my Hyper-V systems, all from within VMM. It means that now I don't have to go to these four or five different locations just to create this thing that I can use for storage for my Hyper-V environment.
Nice. So we really are centralizing the management. And I guess as we kind of look at this end-to-end scenario of being able to set up these complex file servers, it's really good that VMM is now doing this end-to-end deployment. So right, it does the bare metal deployment for your file servers, for your Hyper-V host, for your
exactly
clusters, for your virtual machines, even guest clusters if you want to design that
exactly
inside a template.
Exactly. All pulled together so that now I can just have one location where I have to go to do all these different things. I can really manage my underlying fabric from this one location.
And everything's wizard-based as well, yet also supported by PowerShell, which is worth mentioning. If you haven't had a chance to use Virtual Machine Manager before, everything is built on top of PowerShell. So as you go through any of the wizards on the summary screen, you get a nice little option saying show PowerShell script, and it will actually step you through the different commandlets that made that up. So let's say you're in a scale-out environment. You want to go and deploy 50 clusters.
Exactly.
It's nice that we can do it through VMM, but you still got to go through that wizard 50 times.
Click, click, click. Yeah.
So what we now do, we go through the wizard the first time, save the script, we replace the variables such as the server's name, and then we can just run that script again and again. So our goal here, you know, give you the ability to have that wizard-based approach to just kind of get familiar with it, and then as you want to automate it, run it at scale, we made that easy to do as well.
Exactly. So this really talks about that capability right there, or pieces of what we've been talking about, and that I can manage my storage capacity. I can add LUNs to environments. It can do zone management. It can mask or unmask access to particular LUNs, those types of things. It can also create the correct permissions and access for my Hyper-V host to access file shares and file servers so that I can access the storage, whether it be Fiber Channel, it be iSCSI, it be SMB file shares. We also, within VMM, allow you the ability to manage the new shared VHDX capabilities that Hyper-V has introduced with Windows Server 2012 R2. So if you think about it, what does the storage allocation process look like? If I'm with Virtual Machine Manager, Virtual Machine Manager will connect to an SMIS provider, which will look at the different storage that's out there. It will see these different storage. Now, I'll have different SMIS providers for my iSCSI SAN, for my Fiber Channel SANs, for my different companies of Fiber Channel SANs, as well as for my shared storage with Storage Spaces. Once I see this and discover the storage that's out there, I can create these storage classifications, tier one, tier two, gold, silver, bronze, whatever I want to call it, for the different levels of storage, because I maybe want my SQL servers on the high IOPS type storage, and I may want my web servers on low IOPS, so I can allocate which VMs go where. Then what I'll be able to do is allocate those different classifications to my different host groups, and then from there, attach the correct type of storage to the different hosts that are out there. If I have an existing LUN that's already existing, I can allocate it to a host or a cluster, or if I have a space, I can do that, or I can create a brand new LUN or a space from that storage pool that I have and allocate that to the cluster. And VMM will, through the SMIS provider, will handle the masking, unmasking to ensure that the proper hosts have access to the storage that I want to create for it. And then we talked about it a few seconds ago, and that is provision these low-cost scale-out file servers using VMM in and of itself. So with VMM, I have a host group of Hyper-V hosts, and these Hyper-V hosts need to be able to access some type of shared storage. So I may have this physical storage underneath, shared JBOD attached to a couple of physical servers. I can create storage pools from those servers. From those storage pools, VMM will create these storage spaces, which will then allow me to share those LUNs out by creating a scale-out file server cluster. And at that point, we can do the actual physical deployment of the servers. We can create the scale-out file server cluster, and we can expose those spaces to the particular Hyper-V host that we are concerned about. So let me show you a little bit about what that looks like. So I'm going to flip over to my demo environment, and here what we'll do is we'll show you the different things that we're talking about inside of managing storage. So if we look right here,
so, Kenan, could you just close your PowerPoint presentation? This will allow us to flip over to our demo if you get out of presenter mode.
Sure.
In the meantime, while Kenan does that, what we're going to be showing you here is the Virtual Machine Manager Management Interface. So if you're unfamiliar with System Center, you know, VMM, this is kind of our main fabric management component. So, Kenan, back to you.
All right. So within VMM, I'm going to do a really quick tour of Virtual Machine Manager before I hop into the storage management aspects of it. But as you can see here, I can see these things called clouds. So VMM 2012 introduced these things called clouds, which allow me to create, you know, maybe a development cloud, a production cloud, clouds that access physical resources underneath. And I have different types of hosts. I have a host here that's in my infrastructure host, which I'm not really going to touch. And then I have these other two hosts here, primary and secondary hosts, which are where I'm going to be storing my tenant resources. And I have these different virtual machines that have been deployed there. So I can manage my virtualized environment through this VMs and services workspace. But the things that we're talking about right now and the place I'm going to move to is the fabric workspace. And the fabric workspace allows me to manage my underlying physical compute or servers, storage, and networking resources. So I'm in the storage section of the fabric management, and what you can see here is that I have a couple of providers that are attached. These providers are different devices that I've connected to, and in both of these environments, I'm using scale file servers or SMB file shares to provide storage for my underlying physical Hyper-V hosts. So I have this clustered storage spaces environment on the server, and that was a set of servers that I deployed from bare metal all the way up. And to create a scale out file server, all I need to do is go into create and create a file server cluster. And here I'll go through a wizard to find out what the, I'll call that jumpstart, and I'll call this FS01. Just go through a straight wizard to identify which servers I'm going to be deploying at and what kind of profile I'm going to use to deploy these servers at. So I'm going to use my bare metal controller admin account here as the runners account. And that could use either existing servers or I could provision bare metal computers. So we use bare metal computers. I know these would work, so I'm going to skip cluster validation. Under next, I pick the run as account for the domain infrastructure that I'm going to use. And this run account would be for the bare metal, the baseboard management controller. We support different protocols for accessing depending on what server protocol you're going to use. Then you just go through the rest of it, what type of, which servers you're going to choose and what type of customizations you're going to deploy these with. You know, do I want to create NIC teams or something like that? I'm not going to go through the rest of this now because it's going to take some time to happen. Instead, what I'll do is I'll show you the one that we've already created. So we created this Windows Server 2012 scale-out file server at contoso.com. It's available, and if I look at it and I manage pools, I can see that I already have a pool called FS01 that's using six data disks. Now this machine has some more data disks attached to it, so I could say new, and I have these other four disks here, and I could attach any of those and create a new file share from the storage pool. Once I've created that file share, then we can see that under our classifications and pools. So file share 01 has three different shares outside of it, a dev share, a library 02 share, and a VM data share. And they all have different sizes, and they have capacity that's either available or not available to it. Once I've created these different file shares that are available, I can then go to my individual hosts, like this Windows Server 12 primary host. If I look at the properties there, we can see what storage is attached to it. And as we can see, I have two different file shares attached to it. I have the VM data share and I have the VM share. Now the nice thing about this is that I have I can access shares from different locales. So I have a WS12 LUN file share server and it's deploying out some shares as well as the scale out file server. And both of them are available to me. And when I assign them to this host by just simply hitting add file share, and I can pick the file share I want to add, whether it be, in this case, library or dev, I'll add dev. It will find that SMB share that's out there from that storage pool. It will attach it to the system. It will fix all of the different authentication capabilities, authorize this Hyper-V host to be able to access it. And now that resource can become the shared storage that I can store my virtual machines upon on this system. And once I have these virtual machines stored on an SMB file share, I can do things like live migration, shared nothing live migration, or whatever to move these virtual machines around.
Well, we have a great question coming in from the audience regarding the different types of networks that they should use when doing SMB. So okay. Is a 1 gig network okay? Do we recommend using 10 gigs? I mean, what's kind of our best practices for really trying to optimize this configuration using SMB?
I would say that obviously the faster the network, the better, right? This will work with 1 gig. I mean, I've had it work in my labs with 1 gig. Customers are using it with 1 gig. But if you can get 10 gig or even faster, you're going to have better performance. And the thing is that it all depends on your network traffic and what's happening on that network. If all that network is doing is supporting the SMB file share and it's not supporting VM network traffic or something like that, then maybe a 1 gig will be fine. But if I have my VM traffic and my SMB file share and everything else, including my SQL server or that one-off YouTube app or whatever, it's going to be bogged down. It's probably not going to be enough.
Now, what about NIC teaming? Is it a best practice to have a NICs teamed here?
Absolutely. And the nice thing is that I could say, let's say I have an environment with six adapters inside of it. I could team all six of those adapters together and I could have it use both my management, my SMB file share traffic, as well as my VM traffic all together, and it will be able to support and handle all those different things. Instead of having to create multiple different VM networks, I can basically now combine them all into one.
Awesome, thanks.
So that's the big thing about storage. Now, if we look at some of these virtual machines that are running on these systems, so I have these sales app and these marketing apps, and if we look at the different servers that are out there, I can choose where the storage is located. So if we go to sales app 07 here, and we look at the hardware requirements, we can see that it has a virtual disk, but this virtual disk is attached to that LUN now. I mean, before with Windows Server 2008 R2 and before, this thing never got past, you know, D colon or C colon backslash, but now we can do the whack whack and you see that inside of there. Now, just for the to keep time going, I'm going to flip back to the presentation and we're going to now talk about networking.
Great. So again, you know, we really want to emphasize with Virtual Machine Manager that this isn't just managing VMs. You know, we're managing our networks, we're managing our storage. Really, it's our Fabric Manager, kind of this key critical piece of the infrastructure.
Exactly. And that was new with VMM in System Center 2012 and has just gone wider and expanded and made it much more easier within 2012 SP1 and R2.
Now, I just got one last question about storage. One of the new enhancements that we've just announced for Windows Server is the ability to support storage tiering.
Okay.
Can we take advantage of that using System Center 2012 R2?
So we take advantage of that. Within a pooled environment, if I have SSDs and I have SAS storage and I have them all attached together, or SSDs and HDDs, I can enable storage tiering with Windows Server 2012. In that storage space, I can attach that to VMM, and VMM can create, we can create these SMB file shares and we can attach it. That's all going to happen behind the scenes underneath the covers, basically, for VMM. VMM doesn't look at storage, whether you have storage tiering turned on or not. That's something that Windows Server will just take advantage of underneath. So yes, we can take advantage of it, but we don't do things to specifically tweak things around to enable or disable on a system.
So are you saying that we would first configure it using Windows Server, then once it's configured, we can go add it to our different pools, assign it different capabilities, classifications, different clouds?
Right, so everything that I understand, especially with R2, and now things may change between now and when it releases, obviously, but we don't turn on or turn off storage tiering from within VMM, so I'd have to do that outside of VMM.
Great, thank you.
Sure. All right, now the next step is that I got to handle my storage, now I got to handle my networking environments. And within networking, I have this diverse set of resources, and I want to be able to pull these things together and create these networked environments that need to be isolated from one another, need to have certain capabilities, maybe need to have bandwidth throttling or something like that. So within VMM, I can create these profiles or these VM networks that allow me to assure that the different virtual machines and the different services that are out there access the right kind of network, and then I can create these profiles on those networks to assure that I'm using the correct type of traffic and stuff. So we have this concept of a logical network, and we have this concept of a VM network. Think of VM networks as from the virtual machine down. When the virtual machine is looking down at what it thinks is a physical wire, it's going to be looking at what the VM network is providing. So if the VM network is providing a 10.10.10 network address range, then the VM is going to see that. Think of the logical network as from the underlying infrastructure up. In other words, my underlying physical infrastructure may be using a 172.166 network schema. The logical network will apply those IP addresses for the physical host so that the packets, when they're on the wire, are routed properly, but will communicate with the VM network so that as virtual machines are trying to access each other on this 10-dot network, they will just be routed appropriately to the correct network using Microsoft's network virtualization. So if we look at Hyper-V and its network virtualization, what it really means is this. Think about it this way. I have two different groups. Maybe I have a blue group and a red group or something like that, or blue and orange or whatever the colors are on this slide. But if you look at the blue network here, it may want to use an IP address for a SQL server as 10.1.1.1 and the web server as 10.1.1.2. Now those servers may be on two different Hyper-V hosts. And those Hyper-V hosts actually may be on two totally separate physical subnets or networks. And we've got to ensure that the IP address routing between these different hosts works. And so within VMM, or within Hyper-V, we provide this provider address space. And this provider address space is the physical IP packets on the network that'll handle routing of the packets between the different Hyper-V hosts. And it will communicate with the consumer address space of the virtual machines to ensure that the packet from SQL Server can get to the web server. And so we do this by basically having these different provider addresses, and those provider addresses map to the different consumer addresses that the virtual machines have, so that the virtual machines themselves can talk to each other even though they're on a totally separate isolated network than what the physical machines are. Now the fact is, we've got to layer in the other network, or the orange network, which this orange group may have the exact same networking schema as the blue group, but I want to ensure that the packets are routed appropriately and they're totally isolated. And to do this, Hyper-V Network Virtualization handles that piece of it. And we do that within VMM by assigning different provider addresses for the different VM networks on the different Hyper-V hosts. And those provider addresses will route the packets to the different correct different hosts, depending on where that is, through using the provider address routes that are created and the customer address routes that are out there. So within VMM, we have these two concepts that I brought a little bit about and talked about earlier, and one of them is VM networks. And think of VM networks as, how do I set up and specify different isolations between the different physical hosts, between the different virtual machine guests that are out there, and think of this thing called logical switches as, how do I create these models for handling how these virtual machines access the physical wire. In other words, do I want to set quality of service principles? Do I want to limit them from an amount of traffic, or give them minimum bandwidth or something like that? Do I want to set up specific security enhancements that Hyper-V has enabled, like DHCP guard or router guard or something like that? I do that within the logical switch definitions. So think of a logical switch definition as being something that I would assign to a particular host group. Or set of hosts. So in this case, maybe I have two data centers, one in building 44, one in another building. And inside that logical switch definition, I'm going to have information about the native switch settings. How's this switch set up? Do I want to use any particular Hyper-V extensions like S-Flow, NMON monitoring, or something like that, or the 5.9s of firewalling, or whatever types of things that are out there. I then want to specify and create these port profiles for my different virtual machines. And maybe I have different classes. Databases need one type of profile with a lot of access, but web servers need to limit the amount of traffic that they have on the network, or something like that. As well as set up any type of special profiles for my uplink ports, the physical adapters that are connected to the wire. Like, do I want them teamed or something like that? Then I would specify a classification for those. Now that classification goes between different logical switches. So I can have the same classification, so when the VMs get deployed, they have the same classification. But depending on whether it's my production environment or my dev environment, I might have different capabilities of those underlying physical switches or different quality of service settings. So I can create these different logical switches with these classifications and assign them to the different hosts, and depending on the types of hosts and where they're connected to will depend on what type of resources and access they have, capabilities to access the physical resources. Within 2012 SP1, we introduced the logical switch and VM networks capabilities. Within R2, we've enhanced some of that, and one of the things that we enhanced is the capability of taking advantage of both inbox virtualization gateway that Hyper-V, or that Windows Server 2012 R2 provides, as well as network virtualization gateways that come from our third-party vendors like Iron Networks, F5, or Arista, something like that.
So let me spend a minute just kind of explaining why these network virtualization gateways are important and why people are getting, you know, I just hear more and more about them now.
Right.
No, essentially what we do with our network virtualization gateways is provide kind of a hub to translate our network packets from our isolated private tenant network to the rest of the world, say internal resources such as internal file shares. The way you have to think about it is when we do this isolated network, we basically provide these users with a whole set of IP address ranges. And any VMs within that isolated network, they can all talk to each other. But what happens is for each of these isolated networks, we may have dozens across our environment. Those are all managed independently. But what happens when you have a VM in that isolated network that needs access to a corporate resource, such as a file share? Well, we need to do some type of translation to basically translate this IP address packet to go from our internal corporate fully documented IP schema over to our fully independent private network. And essentially, this NVGRE gateway serves as that function. So it is, it stands for Network Virtualization Generic Resource Encapsulation. And GRE is basically a technology that allows you to add additional information to an IP address packet, so that we can route it better. And essentially, with this gateway, we are adding information, removing it, so that we can update and route those IP address packets from this fully isolated private network back to something on-premise. And right. Then just to kind of emphasize our support story here, to System Center 2012, we fully support third-party integration. System Center 2012 R2, we are going to be providing our own NVGRE gateway that we can go and deploy as a virtual machine.
Right. So not only that, we support the way of linking that network virtualization environment to that gateway, whether it be our inbox gateway or one of these from the third party.
We're doing this management piece of it as well.
Exactly. So this generic routing encapsulation has the ability to pull these resources together and ensure that these packets are routed to the appropriate environment inside of that network virtualization, but we have to get it out there. And the only way to get something from one system to another is to have a gateway, right? So you got to have this gateway accessible for virtualization, for your network virtualization environment. And this is what we provide now with 2012 R2.
Now, a lot of people say, does this only make sense for hosters, right? They're like, hey, I'm not a hoster. I'm never going to use this. Well, let me give you a good example of how we use this at Microsoft. Basically, at Microsoft, we're an active development environment, right? I don't want to be limited by the number of IP addresses that I get. And so basically, within Microsoft, within our buildings, each hallway, each group of offices, they basically provide it with their own unlimited set of IP addresses. It's actually limited to 256 per group. But essentially, we have our own gateways within multiple gateways within each office so that we are not limited by our own IP addresses. And so what this means is I could go and deploy as many VMs as I want, up to 256, so not quite as many. But I don't have this. I have a lot of flexibility, and I don't have to worry about IP address management. So think of this concept of having, these flexible networks for your own dev and your own test environment, when you don't have to worry about giving them a certain number of IP addresses. Let them deploy as many VMs as they want. Really, the goal here is to provide flexibility in the environment, not have these restrictive set of IP addresses. So again, even if you're not a host, lots of very practical real-world implementations you can use this for.
Right, and not only that, it's the ability to offload some of that. As a developer, may want to create some network schema that I don't want to have to manage. So we allow you now to create your own little VM network with the network schema that you want. You deploy your VMs on there. You can manage all that, and I know that my networks are protected from any other trouble that you make.
Great example, yep.
And we have a lot of partners, as we saw on this last slide. We have a lot of partners that have built extensions to the Hyper-V virtualization switch, and we can include those and manage those within System Center, within VMM 2012 on the R2 environment. So we have this inbox gateway as well. So one of the cool things about this inbox gateway within Windows Server 2012 R2 is that it's really, you take a Hyper-V host, an isolated Hyper-V host, you install these different virtual machines on top of there, and these virtual machines act as this gateway. But it's all done in an encapsulated Hyper-V host that you have out there. And we'll manage that entire Hyper-V host, from doing the bare metal deploy if you want on that host, to handling the different virtual machines that are handling the gateway environment. And you can have this gateway to support many different tenants and be able to do things like a site-to-site VPN or something like that, so we can access the environment. So we're provisioning this environment, and that's all done through VMM. If we look at what this network virtualization gateway allows us to do, it allows us to have Two different companies, be able to access this gateway environment. You give it some exposed IP address, and these virtual machines will now appear on your network the same way as the virtual machines that you have on the physical host environment. So now let me flip over and show you in my demo a couple of, just go through this pretty quickly to show you what it looks like.
So after you exit out of the presenter mode and switch over, we're once again going to be showing you System Center 2012 R2 Virtual Machine Manager.
All right, so if we stay back in the fabric environment, we've talked about compute and storage. Now let's talk about networking here. So if I flip down the networking piece, what we're going to see is this logical network. And I talked about that a little bit earlier. The logical network is the underlying representation of the physical wires that are on that system. And as we see here, I have this infrastructure network with the IP, and I have this tenant provider IPs. The tenant provider IPs is going to be the physical wires that are deployed on that system. Within there, I can create these things called port profiles. And the port profiles are what I would specify for uplinks. And now these uplinks are going to be the configuration of how this physical adapter, when I assign this to a Hyper-V host, talks on the physical wire. And we also have guest port profiles. And this would be what kind of bandwidth I want these virtual machines to access. So maybe I have medium bandwidth here, so I can set up things like security settings. Don't want to turn on DHCP guard, router guard, those types of things, but also bandwidth settings. I can specify that this virtual machine is super important, so I can give it full access, or I can say I want to limit it to a max bandwidth of 5 megabits per second or something like that. So I can specify those types of things inside of the port profile. I put all those things together in what we call a logical switch template. And this logical switch is what I would use for those virtual machines that are being deployed. I deploy this logical switch against a host, and then when I create virtual machines on that host, it will use the network virtualization and stuff inside of Hyper-V for that. And here I can decide whether I want to attach an extension, like a third-party gateway or something like that. I can also specify, do I team the uplinks or not within here? And then under the virtual port, which profiles are available as far as bandwidth classification. Nice thing about bandwidth classifications are that I can change these on the fly. So if I had a VM that was running that was taking up all my bandwidth, I can give it a low bandwidth classification on the fly, limit the amount of traffic till I fix it, and then bring it back up again. When I put all those things together, the next thing I would do is assign it to a physical host. So like my Windows Server 2012 primary host right here, if I look under the virtual switches that are attached there, we can see I have a management logical switch and a provider logical switch, and they have specific port profiles assigned to them. And then I would be able to specify what kind of uplink are attached there, and it would do all the work to make sure all the extensions were deployed to that system, all the configurations were deployed there. Lastly, I create the different virtual machines, and I create these different VM networks. And as you can see, the different networks may have same IP addresses or separate IP addresses. Now I'm going to flip real quick to another system because I wanted to show the... before I do that, I'm going to go one more thing in the library. So with System Center, with Virtual Machine Manager 2012 R2, we're actually adding a template for the gateway. So now what this means is that when I have that physical host that's deployed, that Hyper-V host, I can take this service template here and deploy it to that physical host to set up the underlying gateway, or basically that virtualization gateway piece, that inbox gateway, and it'll configure all that stuff for me. And if I look at Designer, it's a pretty easy machine. It has 3 network adapters. It's just an OS that's deployed on there. It's a pretty small OS. I mean, it doesn't even need a lot of processors and RAM. And it attaches the different NICs to the right networks, whether it's the internal Hyper-V virtualization network or the physical network. And it'll do all that deploying for me within that gateway. So we're going to supply that for our customers at deployment time so they can use it. Yeah.
So we had a good customer question come in. Can we only install one NVGRE gateway per host? Depending on that answer, what is the high availability story that we have for our gateway?
Okay, so we can deploy multiple of those gateway VMs on the host, but one gateway VM can handle multiple different virtualization networks. So you only need a gateway. I'm guessing we'll have numbers as we come out with release, but it's like 50 different VM networks can be supported by one gateway virtual machine. So it's not like we need to have more than one for a lot of environments that we have. The other thing is that template I showed you there was a single VM, but we can have that as a multiple VM in a clustered environment. So it will be clustered, so you will have that high availability capability for that environment. And so I believe, and this is something that we'll find out more later as we move to release, but that multiples of those VMs can be on separate physical hosts too, so that I can ensure redundancy if the physical host goes down, and
so
I can still get the packets
eliminating
out.
Single points of failure.
Exactly.
You know, one thing I know that we can do if we have multiple VMs that are that gateway row, we can add them to what we call an availability group.
Right.
So an availability group is a concept in System Center 2012 where basically if you say two VMs are in the same availability group, it will purposely spread them out across different hosts. So for example, you have two NVGRE gateways, you have two domain controllers, you have a two-node guest cluster. We want to make sure those are living on different physical hosts, so you eliminate that single point of failure. And so that's one thing we can do with the NVGRE gateway.
Exactly. So the one thing I wanted to show you, and this is really to emphasize what we were talking about earlier, where I have these network virtualized environment, and on-premises I have these two virtual machines that are within the same network. So they have, if you look at customer address, that's the address that the VM sees. We see a .2 and a .3 here on this 172.16 network. Now, that provider address on the underlying physical host is 10.232.77, but as you can see, it's the same provider address because we're talking to the one host, and they can talk to each other, the VMs can talk to each other. I have this whole other environment that my host has provided me a Hyper-V server. I'm managing that within my VMM environment, and it has a totally separate provider IP addressing scheme. I also have another virtual machine on there for my sales group, and they want a totally separate IP address, this 10.55.76 network. Well, with network virtualization, two things have to happen. One, these virtual machines that are running on premises need to be able to access the physical environment. And so this gateway is the virtual to physical gateway, whether it's the one that's in box with R2 or it's one from our partners, has to be able to do that routing between them. And also, this virtual machine needs to be able to run, whether it's running on my premises or in this other data center over here. So what I can do is I can just take, and just to show you an example of some of the things that we can do, I can take that virtual machine, which is running over here under VMs and services, and this finance server VM. Let me just make sure that's the one I want. Yes, finance server. And I can just drag it and drop it over to that other Hyper-V host that's running on that other network on my hoster. It will do the live migration check. So one, it'll check to make sure that the machine has available resources. It'll make sure that the networking is set up appropriately so that I can move this virtual machine out there. It'll make sure that the storage is available over there. And I will be able to do a migration of this virtual machine from my physical host here over to that other data center environment. Now, we've increased it in this demo, in this lab environment, in that we're using a virtual machine that's stored on a file share, and so we're doing just the live migration of the system. But I could also do a shared nothing live migration, move the entire virtual machine and disk and everything over. And I kick off the live migration, and it starts moving the virtual machine over, copying the contents of memory and everything over to that system. And what you're going to see is that the host environment is still going to be able to access that virtual machine as I move it over. And a couple of the cool things that you're going to notice here is that VMM will manage the networking underneath to ensure that when we move this virtual machine over, it gets its unique provider address for the VM network over at the other side of the host, but also that the virtual machine itself will still be able to talk back to both the VMs on its network and out through the gateway to the physical environments that are out there. And so this is going to take a minute or so to pop over. If I flip back, oh, it's already finished. And so the virtual machine itself has moved over. We can see the consumer address or the customer address has stayed the same, so these VMs can all talk to each other, but the provider address here has moved over to the other environment, and so has the provider address of a network environment at that other Hyper-V host on that other network. So, and then we just handle all the routing and stuff underneath in between.
Very nice. Now, a few questions. First of all, what is the interface that we're seeing there on the screen?
So this is a custom app that we developed that just shows the particular VMs that we care about. We didn't want to have something that, if you have thousands of VMs, you know, it
wouldn't
makes
be
it
that
really
practical.
Hard to see. But it just shows you graphically what it is. And all it does is using PowerShell to grab information from a Hyper-V host. What VMs are on your host? What's your provider address, consumer address? Does it for the other Hyper-V host? So it's not a System Center product. It's just a really simple web app that we created to show this.
Now, as we built up this network topology, did we need to input this ourselves, or was it automatically discovered for us?
When you say input as far as the provider address and the
customer
address?
Well, as far as building up our view of the logical network.
So we would say, and what we did was we created inside of VMM, under the fabric environment, we created these logical networks, this logical network called DC infrastructure. And it has the IP address range of 172.16.10. And any VMs that were deployed against this DC infrastructure would get assigned that provider address. So we didn't have to tell it which provider address to use. We just picked it from, VMM just automatically assigned that from the list. Now I would create another one of these for the 17, the other networks. So for every single network, I'd have a network site for that.
Great. Now, with all of these network virtualization features, building this topology, having these gateways, is that going to be supported across different hypervisors? Meaning, you know, we have a VMware, Microsoft in the environment. Can we configure this virtualized network and use these features across these different hosts?
So Hyper-V network virtualization and the stuff we're doing here is for Hyper-V systems. If I have VMware environments, I have Citrix environments, they use these things called logical networks just because we have to map them into what we're using with VMM. But I'm not going to have this flexibility and this this capability of creating these isolated environments from within VMM for those other systems. This is all done for Windows Server in 2012 and Hyper-V environments.
Great.
All right, so we've got to move on. We've got a couple more sections to go through, so I'm going to flip back to my presentation here. And we're going to talk about constructing
the private cloud.
Exactly. Now, I'm not going to focus on everything that we can do within within VMM 2012 in R2. I'm really going to focus on just the new stuff in R2 that we did. So if we look at what a private cloud is, it's basically taking those physical resources out there, creating this level of abstraction, and building basically a pool that we can then allocate to individuals or to groups. What we've really done within VMM 2012 SP1 as well as R2 is really handle that multi-tenant environment, ensure that the different users have the ability to access the resources that they need to access, but not anything more. So the things I want to talk about here are that we can logically group these resources using the clouds and tenants and VM networks to create these different isolated environments for my sales environment, my finance environment, those types of people, or as a hoster for company A, company B, that type of thing. And we show the resources and the services that are deployed for those particular clouds through the VMs and services view. Now, if I'm logged in as just a tenant, I'm only going to see the clouds that I have access to. But if I'm logged in as administrator, obviously I'll see everything across the different tiers that are out there. And we leverage and use the physical cloud resources that are available to us through the host groups. And that could be my Microsoft, my VMware, my Citrix Hyper-V systems. We can also create clouds that are over-provisioned, meaning that I have a cloud that says it can use 600 gigabytes of RAM, but maybe I only have 200 gigabytes of RAM on my Hyper-V systems that are out there right now, because I can just add more resources into this environment, and then it will, you know, be able to take them out without having to make all these different changes in between them. And within 2012 SP1, and really enhanced with R2, is we have these role-based access capabilities. So I can create this thing called a read-only administrator, and basically this is a help desk type person where they can see what's happening with the environment. They can go and look at all the different hardware and everything. So they can create, you know, help tickets or something like that and move on and find out what's going on with the environment. I have this self-service user. Now, this is the lowest level of management and inside of VMM, and this is where you can create restrictions. So I can just say, okay, these self-service users for sales have the ability to create VMs, but only deploy these images that I've given them permission to. They have the ability to start and stop VMs, but that's it. Or I can say this one has start and stop, deploy, author, whatever. I can give them different levels of utilization. The other thing I can do is with the tenant administrator is I can create an administrative account for that particular tenant, and then they can create their own different self-service users inside of there. So if I'm a service provider and I have a company and company A, then I can say, okay, company A, you have the access to do these different virtual machines, but and you can create these different self-service users so that, you know, Bob at company A can make his own self-service user for sales, finance, those types of things. And then a delegated administrator would access just a particular set of hardware assigned to a particular cloud, and a VM administrator obviously has access to everything and can manage all of the environment. Now, one of the things we added with R2 inside of System Center 2012 within VMM is the ability to create granular level access at a per cloud level. So we've always had the ability to set quotas at individual cloud levels, but now we've added the ability to set permissions at these individual cloud levels, which means that in a development environment, I may want this user to be able to do everything, give them full control, you know, start, stop VMs, create new VMs, delete, and whatever.
Checkpoints are a great one for
Absolutely.
The developers.
But in production, all I want them to be able to do is start and stop a VM. So I can now create this granular level control within a user profile. Before, I'd have to create multiple profiles. People would have to log out, log back in. It was just kind of annoying. So we've fixed that.
Now, is this Active Directory integrated, and could we use the concept of groups, for example?
It is, and it is.
Great.
So absolutely, which means that I, as an administrator, can use under members. If you look here on the upper left in the graphic, under members, it has, that's where I would choose which Active Directory groups or whatever. And now the thing is that I may have tenants that are outside of this group. As a service provider, you know, I have different cloud tenants from different companies. They're not going to give them access to my Active Directory. But basically what I'll do is I'll run on behalf of. And so I'll pick a group and I'll run those users on behalf of this permission. And so they'll have that permission, but they won't have a membership inside of my Active Directory. So besides being able to assign permissions using the Active Directory users and groups, I will also be able to assign quotas. And these quotas are at the group level, which means any person who's a member of this user role, if you aggregate all those things together, I can set a quota at that level, or I can set it at a per user level. This is important, you know, if I can set quotas at the all members level, means that I can say, okay, the sum total of all my dev group can create 100 VMs, but I don't want any one user to create more than 20 VMs, so I can set that type of thing.
So we have limits both on the per user as well as their per group type of basis.
Exactly. So this means that, you know, if, let's say I have I can set a 50 VM limit, and if I have 10 people in that group, I can set a 10 per user limit, so if the first 5 people each create 10 VMs, then the other 5 people can't create any until they delete some, obviously. So that gives me the ability to build that separation right there. Now next, I want to just talk really quickly about some of the reporting capabilities. So we integrate VMM with Operations Manager to handle reporting, and that helps me understand if I need to know what the utilization is in my private cloud right now, what am I going to use over time, what kind of prediction or forecast am I going to use in the future. And we do this by just basically, we have a management pack that connects into Operations Manager, and we pass all this private cloud reporting into Operations Manager, and I can run reports. I can choose a date range, which host I want to look at, and I can view the results as to how much utilization they're using. The other thing that we added with the original version of 2012, and it just keeps getting better and better, is this analysis, or what-if forecasting. In other words, I can monitor my cloud utilization over the past, say, 10 months, and be able to forecast out over the next 3 months what's going to happen with that cloud using SQL Server analysis services. So this gives me a little bit of the, I know I'm using more and more resources every month, but when am I going to run out? And this gives me that ability to figure those things out and maybe decide when I might run out of those resources. And we give you a range because we don't know exactly, but we know that it's going to be somewhere in between here. We're using SQL Server analysis services to figure that out, and it's pretty good at figuring those things out.
Yeah, I think you bring up an interesting point. You know, as we kind of talk about the benefits of moving to a cloud, whether that's a public cloud or a private cloud, we talk about cost and financial. Now, a lot of people think about the financial benefits as far as only pay for what I use. But, you know, one of the other big major financial benefits is this predictive analysis. Being able to understand what am I going to use, what are my usage patterns over time, where am I going to get to in the future.
Exactly, and I don't ever want to run out of resources because all of a sudden now I'm not meeting my SLAs for my customers, and that can be more expensive than buying 10 more servers or something like that. So I need to know, and this gives me the ability to figure that out.
Great. So let's move over to day-to-day operations and talk about some of these advantages that we've added with this release.
All right, so I'm not going to go through everything under day-to-day operations. I mean, we have a lot of stuff about dynamic optimization, power optimization, those types of things. One of the things that we added with R2 is this ability to do some things that are different with service templates than we did before. So in 2012, we introduced this thing called a service template, which is the ability to take a collection of virtual machine tiers and build them together that can basically, they can talk to each other, they're deployed together. The web tier kind of knows about the app tier, that type of thing. Each one of these tiers is a VM template that can have one or more virtual machines assigned to it.
So this would be like a large enterprise application, right? It's not just running on one VM, it's running on a collection, and we manage it as a single logical unit.
Exactly, and if you think about a lot of your applications today, there's a web tier that usually runs on a web farm or something like that. There's an application tier that maybe is using clustering to keep it up and running. And then there's a data tier, a SQL environment. And that data tier could be an existing SQL server I just want to attach to, or it could be a brand new SQL deployment or something like that. So this service basically puts all these things together and gives me this multi-tier environment with each of these tiers could have multiple different virtual machines. One of the challenges customers have faced inside of this tier environment is that, let's say when I'm deploying this brand new application, I want to deploy a cluster. Well, when I deploy that first server of the cluster, I have to do certain things, but when I deploy all the other different pieces of that cluster, I don't have to do all those same tasks. And with 2012 and 2012 SP1, we basically would run the same thing. So you'd have to add in a lot of logic inside of there as to what's going to run, whether it's the first VM of the tier or multiple VMs of the tier. With 2012 R2, we've added this asymmetric provisioning within a tier, meaning that I can do one thing on the first instance of that virtual machine that I deploy, and I can do other things on the remaining servers of that that I'm deploying within that tier. So like if I want to create a cluster, I can do all the work to create the cluster in the first one and then just add node for the other ones instead of having to do all this different work that I had to do before. The other thing we've done is we've allowed you to build this lifecycle support for script app deployment. So a lot of customers moving to this cloud environment are doing things like Chef or Puppet, which gives them some classification and building of how they're deploying these services. Well, we want to be able to support things like that, and so we've modified how we handle services to support that capability as well. Then one of the last things we did, and this was just really rounding out the environment, like when we supported vSphere 5.0, we're now also being able to re-support deploying services into VMs running on a Xen hypervisor. So that's just another piece we're adding inside of there. We've enhanced in 2012 R2 SP1, but just you know works better in R2, is our support of Linux virtual machines and guests inside of VMM. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to give you the ability to do the customizations that you expect inside of a Windows environment, like give it a name, password, those types of things, join to the domain, that type of stuff. Well, we now allow you to do customization inside those Linux guests, where I can give it the root password, I can set a computer name, DNS domain name, those types of things, the IP address of the VM, and then run a run once command so you can run your own little scripts inside of there as well. And we support all the different guests that we support with Windows Server 2012 R2.
And I'm actually, one question before we go there as well. Now, as we talked about deploying these AppV packages and these other components within the VM, are we required to use Configuration Manager? Is there a dependency on that?
There isn't a dependency on Configuration Manager, but a lot of organizations use Configuration Manager in conjunction with VMM. They'll deploy the OSs with VMM, and maybe they'll do patch updates with Configuration Manager, but maybe major service pack updates back again with VMM. Or they'll do the OS management with Configuration Manager, but they'll do the Application Manager with VMM. they do work in conjunction with each other.
But there is no dependency.
There's
on
no
it,
dependency
right?
on those.
So you're not required to go and configure to set up Configuration Manager in order to use service templates to do these deployments.
Exactly. And deploying Linux guests here, now they can be services that we can, they can be tiers of services that we deploy on Hyper-V systems as well. So we talked about just some of the main enhancements that we've had over the past from VMM 2012 SP1 to R2 in the compute, storage, networking, deployment aspects as far as constructing the private cloud and the day-to-day operations. But there have been a lot of enhancements that we've made, and I want to go through some of these other ones as well inside of VMM here. So we support synthetic fiber channel support. With SP1, we acknowledge that you had it, but we couldn't do anything with it. Now we fully support it. You can see those things inside of VMM. We manage zones as well as just managing the physical SANs themselves through SMS provider. Offload data transfer support. So here we take advantage of some of the things that Hyper-V has been doing with Windows Server 2012 and better with R2. We now support it inside of VMM directly instead of having to do it outside of VMM. Like I said, provision scale-out file server cluster from the bare metal. We can do all that stuff. We showed you that in the demo. And then integration with differencing disks. So I can have multiple differencing disks and manage those without having to... before, we just didn't really understand some of that piece inside of there. If we look at the networking, we have the site-to-site networking gateway that we deploy. We integrate with IP address management, or IPAM. The simplified guest IP management, we actually, within VMM now, have a DHCP server, so you can bring up a system and we'll just give you a DHCP address, as well as we could do a static IP address as we want. Top-of-rack switch integration, the extensions for the Hyper-V virtual switch, so now we can integrate with things like the Cisco 1KV and NVGRE, the network virtualization generic routing encapsulation piece. We can do those things together, where with SP1 we had to do one or the other, that type of thing. Some of the infrastructure environments. Let's say I had a highly available VMM, so I can have a VMM as a cluster node and I can fail it over.
Running directly on the bare metal cluster.
Right. So it's running on a cluster. And before, when it failed over, that task that was running would just fail and you'd have to manually go in and restart or whatever. So now we'll auto-resume that task if it's resumable when we do the failover. Expanded scope for VMM update management, so we've done some work to enhance that piece of it. The management pack integration between Ops Manager and Service Manager, we've done some enhancements there to ensure that you're getting the best information and knowledge as to what's happening with this environment. And then user role improvements, we talked about where the ability is for the guest user role to be able to at a per cloud level, assign permissions is what it can do.
Now, I had a good question that came in late regarding these user roles and this quota capacity. Can we use this feature, being able to manage user roles, assign certain amount of resource capacities across other hypervisors?
As long as we do it on a per cloud level, so whatever hypervisors are supporting that cloud, it'll work for them.
So we still have the Active Directory integration, even if your users are ultimately deploying their VMs on an ESXi host?
It doesn't matter, because we're doing it a
we're
level above that,
right?
We're doing it at the cloud. So if the cloud says I have 30 gigabytes of RAM that I can deploy to these VMs, it doesn't matter what those VMs are deployed onto, because as long as if the cloud has access to Citrix resources, VMware resources, and Hyper-V resources, if I have 3 gigs over here, 20 gigs over here, then I can't deploy anymore over here.
Makes sense.
It's above that level. And then if you look at the VMs themselves, we support differencing disks. So now I can do things like a shared VHDX across VMs within a service template. So within Hyper-V 2012 R2, we support shared VHDX. Well, within VMM, if I create a service template for a cluster and I want to use shared VHDX, I can do all that within the VMM itself. Services on Xen, the ability to inject files into VM prior to the first boot. So before, when I was doing a configuration, a post-deployment configuration of the VM to do all the customization, everything like that, I would have to start to boot up the VM before I could inject files into it. Now I can inject files prior to that boot, which means that if I had any special customizations or whatever, I can push those in Immediately, we can do online VHDX resize, so Hyper-V now supports that for your SCSI virtual disks, and we can do that inside of VMM. And live cloning, so Hyper-V within Windows Server 2012 R2 supports now live cloning, so we can do that now within VMM. And then I can run different scripts on the first machine as opposed to the other machines inside of that tier. So we talked about that asymmetric provisioning, where if I want to do first node in a cluster, do one thing, everything else, do another thing. I can do all that kind of stuff. So with that, I recommend that if you want more information, you go to Server Cloud website, Microsoft Learning, MVA, all those different types of things. And that really is the new stuff with infrastructure provisioning with System Center 2012 R2.
Excellent. Well, before we wrap this up, one final question. We have a customer here that's interested in, you know, moving over to the Hyper-V platform.
Okay.
They currently have hundreds of VMs, and they're saying, do we have any type of capacity planners? So off the top of my head, I'm thinking of MAP. Could you talk about, you know, some of the options they have to think about? How can they plan? How can they analyze current roles? Okay.
So one of the nice things is if you look at the, did you say physical servers or virtual machines?
They have about 100 VMs they're looking to migrate. They're looking to virtualize some physical servers.
Sure. So if you look at the existing virtualization environment you have, when you start moving them over to from one system to another system, it's going to be about the same amount. So if I have 40 servers to support those 100 servers over there, I'm probably going to need that same amount of resources at the new one, because virtualization, you're going to get about the same performance across these different things. Some hypervisors will do better on one thing, some on the other thing. But if you look at things like the Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, the MAP tool that you're talking about, that will give you a lot of information as to what it thinks you're going to need at the Hyper-V environment for those same set of resources. Understands that this is an ESX or a Cetrix Zen host or whatever, and those virtual machines out there, gets the utilization and starts to pull that together. The other thing is we have some conversion tools to take a system running on one hypervisor and move it over. So you can use those tools to convert those virtual machines over from the one system to the other.
Excellent. Well, that just about wraps up this section. Hopefully, you kind of got a good overview of some of our primary infrastructure provisioning capabilities. And coming up next, Juan is going to join us to talk about how we go and monitor that environment. So it's great that we've got our fabric established, our compute storage, and our network, but let's make sure it stays healthy.
Exactly. Not just, what do you do afterwards, right?
Exactly. And not just availability, but we're also going to be looking at performance. So not just is it working or not, but how well it's working.
Great.
That's important. Well, with that, Kenan, thank you for joining us. We're going to see you at the end of the day when we cover Module 7, taking a look at Windows Azure Pack.
All right.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in 10 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you.